No taxation without representation. 200 years of exploitation in the capital of this nation. No representation in the capital of this nation. 200 years of exploitation. Give the people their right to vote. Someone asked me, was it true? The voting rights of the district were long overdue.
That was Sweet Honey in the Rock with Give the People Their Right to Vote, because a vote is a terrible thing to waste, and we know that on Shadow Politics. Welcome. We're a grassroots talk show that is on a new mission to make America think again. We hope our show will shine a light on the issues that are changing our lives and charting America's course for the future. I'm your host, recently retired United States Senator Michael D. Brown. I've been in the shadows for the past 18 years, and now I'm stepping into the light because it's what happens in the shadows that makes history and moves us forward. Together with my brilliant co-host, Liberty Jones, smartest young woman on the planet, we want to start a dialogue with America about the truth, because we need to change what's going on, y'all. We've been taken in by this three-card Monty hustler who's in the White House these days. So Liberty and I are here to talk and lay out an agenda for our upcoming shows and tell you what's bothering us. And Liberty, welcome to the show. Thanks so much for co-hosting as always. What do you have to say for yourself?
Well, thank you so much for having me on. It's a pleasure to be here, like always. And I have to say, today we have a really important conversation to have, because recently I think we've left the space of being paralyzed from fear, and we've moved into a space of not even knowing how to act. There are people dying in detention camps. You know, and I wonder how much worse the deaths are going to get when they're running away from alligators in a live alligator territory. And nobody is even talking about it except for the community being affected, at least on the media. It's like we focus on one day of this and we move on completely. There are people dying. There are mothers being ripped away from their babies. And to me, this no longer is about the Democrats or the Republicans. To me, this is about humanity. And to me, this is about one person who's influencing a country of hate and of discrimination. It really breaks my heart that the best person we had to represent us, especially represent the Republicans, was someone who justifies murder for people who came to this country who believed in it, who wanted a better life for themselves, for their families. And not only do we take away their rights of hope, but we take away their lives. I had to speak on that, but...
Well, I think you're right. And I think, you know, a couple of things that I would point out is, first, I would point out one of the things that you said to me very early on when we started to do the show, that these people lack empathy. And they really do. And that is really at the center of all this. This struggle has been going on since day one. The only ones that accepted immigrants without a fight were the Native Americans. Actually, they did put up a fight, but they lost. You know, so we've been fighting about this. People have been apoplectic about it since its beginning. And unfortunately, I think that the racism and misogyny that underlies it all is unfortunately a condition of mankind. You know, we see right now what's going on in Gaza between the Palestinians and the Jews, and you know, they're cut from the same cloth. They're all Semites, and yet they're going at it like there's no tomorrow. The Ukrainians and the Russians. Ukraine was part of Russia at one time. These people have a common bond. This is going on all over the world, and that's really what makes it distressing. And the thing that you mentioned Liberty about the alligator camp. You know, the thing that distresses me most about that, and there are so many things to distress us about that, and maybe we should do a show about it, but the one thing that distresses me about it is the symbolism. You know, they're putting these people in the middle of the swamps to degrade them and to scare other people. You know, we see Kristi Noem going on TV saying, hey, if you're an illegal immigrant, you tell us, we're going to kick your ass out, but maybe we'll let you back in. You know, these are horrible people that are, they're on a mission. And unfortunately, I think racism is at the bottom of it, and it's always been there. Let me ask you, as a young person, because you must see less of this on college campuses, don't you? Or do you see more of it? Do you see people becoming more racist again and more segregated again? You know, my generation thought we got rid of that. You know, we all sang Kumbaya and we hugged each other and then we copped out for good jobs. But so have we ended racism with young people, do you think?
Well, that's a really interesting question. You know, I think I live in DC. I go to a pretty liberal school. The people around me are very liberal. And so I think that racism, the way that this movement of hatred is prevailing there, is a bit different. You know, I think that for a really long time in the United States, we had blacks and whites at different tables, right? Wow. And I think that's still a reoccurring theme, except for a little bit now, we thought the pendulum was swinging around. And we thought people in color were the ones in power. This is the orientation that I think younger kids in Democratic areas are feeling. And it got a little weird because when I got to college, a lot of people who were white, they would be completely shocked and out of words if you brought up race. Or, you know, one time my friend was walking around DC and she passed by Howard University. And she was like, oh my gosh, this is the first black college in, you know, DC. And the people turned around, they were like, shh, you can't say that. You know what I mean? And so I think when I first got here, we were so scared of not doing the wrong thing in the community that we kind of reverted ourselves to self-imposed racism. You know, the community of people who felt upon them white guilt, let's say, is a term that is passed around a lot. But you know, nowadays that anomaly has grown so much more because the people of color are being oppressed so much more that people won't even, like, they don't even know how to act. You know what I mean? Like, the really good people who have a good heart are embarrassed. They don't even want to talk about it. They're like, okay, well, what about abortion rights? You know, they don't even want to address the fact that we are mass deporting a certain racial group without warrants. You know, they don't want to address the fact that Trump had a press conference about alligator Alcatraz. And he said, yep, it's very appropriate that there's alligators everywhere because that's not a place I want to go hiking. They asked him, and this is fact check interview. They asked him, so what are you going to do when these prisoners escape? And he was like, well, that's the point. So, you know, people are so shocked. They left. I think they left the place of fear paralyzing them. And they moved into the space of, how do I act? What do I say? How do we respond? You know, people are losing jobs left and right, even if they do have their papers. Everyone's unemployed. There's no way of, it's just, it's a disaster. And my question to you is, I think you have like a really important place right now in this field. You know, it's interesting how we planned perfectly for this. And we have the new generation who's witnessing this type of behavior for the first time in a country that I thought was so free. And we have you who's been around watching these patterns of inequality come and resurface and leave. And what do you believe right now, you know, taking into account how we've had, I mean, you were around back in the day, you were around when, you know, civil rights was still a really passionate, powerful message. So what do you believe is the most pressing threat to the American democracy today? What do you think in the patterns that you've witnessed is the most pressing threat to the issues that we're seeing?
Well, you know, one thing I have to say is from my perspective, came from the mountaintop. I was a white guy. You know, I didn't have any problems. You know, I never once, you know, it's funny that I've heard white people say over and over and over again, how advantaged Black people are, or how advantaged brown people are. They get all these government benefits. They get all these things that we don't get, that we have to work hard for. But you know what? In 71 and a half years, I've never heard one person say, I wish I was Black. It would be easier. I've never heard one person say, you know, I wish I was a person of color because I wouldn't have to work so hard. You know, so the thing that I think is the biggest threat to our democracy right now is this idea that you don't have to be involved. You know, that we see young people, we've just seen this mayoral primary in New York City where young people actually pushed this candidate over the top and made him the winner. So maybe we'll get young people more involved. And I think that's a threat. You know, we were involved. I went down on the mall and fought against and protested against the Vietnam War. Part of it was I was 18 and I was A1 draft status, which meant I could be drafted at any moment. So part of it was myself. You know, I had my own self-interest involved. Part of it was it's what young people did. You know, we gathered socially, and I'm going to ask you a question about that in a minute. But basically what I did when I was your age is I went to rock concerts and I went to protests. And sometimes they were the same. Sometimes it was the same place. But, you know, we were engaged. We were involved. And then and now I see so many people, young people and old people, who are saying it doesn't make any difference. You know, they forgot that a handful of votes made a difference in the election of George Bush over Al Gore. They forget that sometimes, you know, just a few votes here or there will make the difference in how America moves forward. And you know, I think that's the biggest threat to democracy. There's a thing inscribed on the archives building which says, all that it takes for evil to succeed is for good men to do nothing. And that's what I worry about. There's too much do nothing going on. So let me ask you, we never had this opportunity. When I went to a rock concert, I met people of all different persuasions and colors and sexes and, you know, orientations. But today, do you guys do that anymore? Or do you go down some rabbit hole on the internet where everybody's exactly like you? So you don't see any diversity. You don't see, you know, on a personal level. You're dealing with only people that are just like you. What? How do you feel about that? I know that you're a particularly social person, but you're very friendly and very warm. But do people, what do you think about the isolation that we didn't have the opportunity to experience, really? We couldn't be isolated.
Yeah, you know, that's a really interesting question. Because I think when I first got to college, we saw a really interesting moment in the United States where a lot of the population was, and I think this is part and due to the media, but a lot of kids that I was around really did not feel proud to be an American. And I think still they don't, but a lot of people didn't. And so because of that, it was like we were all romanticizing the Latin manifestation all over again. You know, Latin beauty trends were becoming a thing. And, you know, it was a trend to wear a shirt that said Brazil on it with the Brazilian flag colors. And it was a huge thing to romanticize these Caribbean and, you know, Latin countries. And it was really nice to see, because maybe they were doing it for the wrong reasons. You know, I think nationalism is important, but they realized that, you know, there is more to the world. And I think that happened a lot after the pandemic. People were starting to realize how when they got more connected to technology, there's a lot more to the world than just their inner circle. So that was a beautiful thing to witness. And I think that nowadays, it's really sad because people are feeling more and more like they need to be segregated. Before it was like, wow, you're so interesting, you know, let's finally unite and get to know each other's. Let me go to your part of town. Let's go to get some Mexican food at the food truck. You know what I mean? And now people are scared to be a part of it because we're so deeply segregated. It's like everything is happening all over again in terms of segregation. Like, and you know, I don't want to make too many congruencies, but concentration camps in the 1940s did begin with ghettos. You know what I mean? And so I think that people are just scared to step out of bounds because of the idea of, you know, white guilt and the guilt of being the enforcer, because of the idea that they're not feeling nationalistic about their own country and they don't want to represent as that. And instead of coming with a wow curiosity, like let's join and unite, this man has pooped on the possibility of that being a thing and incited a fear that prevents us from uniting and getting to know each other with curiosity, because or we're scared we're the projectors or we're scared that we're gonna get kidnapped. So it's really sad, you know, there's a division that is completely falsely executed that we're all abiding by.
Well, you know, isn't that the purpose of all this stuff, which is a really scary thing? You know, when we talk about banning the books, a few weeks ago we had a librarian who's running for office in India May, who's running for office in Iowa, who's a librarian in her first fight in politics. And this is how most people get involved in politics, to tell you the truth. Most people get involved because of something personal. They got involved in a battle to do something in their neighborhood that they didn't like, that they were doing some development or something, or they had a crisis with something, with education or something else, and something that's spurred them to get involved. And India is certainly doing that. And she started her political adventure, I think, or path on the basis of what the books they were banning in her library, the books that they want to ban in her library. And that's where it starts, right? They're going to rewrite the narrative. They're going to change. We see this in communism all the time. The first thing that they do after the revolution is they burn all the books. They rewrite the history. That's what they're doing now. They're renaming stuff. They're burning books, taking books out of libraries. Then they're also, as you just pointed out, Liberty, this was the same path they took, which led to concentration camps. And let's not forget, if we think we're above all that, that we had internment camps in this country for Japanese Americans who we were afraid, for some damn reason I can't understand, we were afraid they were going to help with an invasion. I don't know why we didn't lock up German Americans or Italian Americans, since they were also part of the Axis, but we just decided we were going to pick on Japanese, I think, because we could. They were easily segregated. I think we've turned from skin color to economic status. Now poor people are the enemy for some reason that I can't understand. And I think, you know, when you look out at all that immigrants have done to build America, this country was built on immigrants. And if you don't know that, you don't know our history. And let me tell you why these people are coming here today. They're not coming here today to commit crimes. They're not coming here today to undo democracy. The reason they're coming is the reason that they always came. The reason that your grandparents and my grandparents and everybody's grandparents or parents or people that don't have a name that is from... given from an Indian tribe or a Native American tribe, all of us came from somewhere. And we all came for the same reason. And these people are coming for the same reason. But this narrative, since I'm a little bit older than you, I remember this narrative. And that is that, you know, they said it about the Irish. They said it about the Italians. They said it about the Poles. They said it about Black people. They've said it about people of color. you know, Latinos and Latinas. This is a very old narrative, and it's the oldest political trick in the book. You're not the problem. The problem are these other people. And really, that's a great threat to democracy. That may be the worst threat to democracy. And not being involved, since that's the only way to counter that, I think is what bothers me most. But it's a very old narrative. And, you know, can I ask you, what do you think about the Big Beautiful Bill? Have you had time to digest any of this stuff? I mean, it's terrible. They want to increase the production of, they want to increase energy production. Before you do that, I think you should take a long look at what's going on in Texas right now and what's been going on in California and North Carolina and other places. We don't need to be throwing any more carbon into the atmosphere. But they want to do that, and they want to put up more border security. Let's keep everybody. I mean, I feel like they bitch slapped the Statue of Liberty. Let's keep everybody out. You know, instead of a welcome sign, we now have a keep out sign. And they want to do it by cutting Medicare and adding $3 trillion to the debt. All of this hurts poor people. So they're doing it on the backs of poor people. And again, I got to tell you, I don't know how you feel about all this, because this is all future stuff. Doesn't worry me, because I'm a rich white guy. But if I was a young working or student, young working person or student, I'd be worried about the future. Are you worried about the future?
Yes, definitely. I'm definitely worried about the future. I think that I'm not even worried for myself, honestly. I'm worried for humanity, truly. I'm scared. You know, I think like this big, beautiful bill, I don't know what I'm more scared of, the people or for the planet. You know, he's removing, we are re-carving up American land. We are removing public land provisions that have been provided and cut down by little secretly over years, right? This big, beautiful bill is going over 11 countries, you know, from Arizona to New Mexico, and cutting down beautiful natural parks that we've held on to so strongly because they've tried to remove it for so long. He did it like this. And it's just so alarming to me how this one man can have so much power. And it's even more alarming to me that there's so many people that can't see that. A lot of these issues that he's proposing on this big, beautiful bill have never been issues before, especially not voters' issues. Maybe I'm talking to different voters, but you know, one of the things, and I mentioned this to you because I think it's kind of comical, they're removing hospital beds and they're cutting down taxes on tanning salons. So we're going to have more tanning beds than hospital beds soon in this country, is what that's looking like. And it's really interesting because, you know, we want to cut all ties and remove all of the immigrant population that built our country and built our culture. And then we want to embody their culture and become a little more colored in our skins. So it's an anomaly, you know, how we've deconstructed the narrative so much to hate each other, when in reality, we just don't understand each other and we want to be like each other. And, you know, my question to you is, obviously, I unfortunately didn't have the privilege of being a hippie from the 70s. And I know you weren't, but I know you're around to witness that. And that's a dream of mine. But, you know, a lot of times I look at this and I think divide and conquer. Divide and conquer. You know, social media is a scary place out there. You get stuck in the tunnel that belongs to your wavelength. And my question to you is, how do you think this political polarization, you know, the role of media, how it's increased so much along the years, and it's often fueled by misinformation too, which is an important consideration, how do you think that that's made the American public more vulnerable to manipulation and more vulnerable to reject human rights that are basic to the way that we express ourselves in society, to believe a list of things that a rich white guy thinks are useful for the country.
Well, you know, I think it's all about being self-centered again. And I was a hippie, but I was TV sitcom hippie. I had long hair. I listened to rock music. I wore tie-dye. I had patches all over my jeans. I wore an American flag on my ass. You know, we did all those things. We were counterculture. We hated everything that was establishment, but only so much. You know what I mean? I didn't live in a commune. We didn't change the world. We kind of copped out when it came to materialism and bought into the whole program. But there was a unity there, I think, that is different than it is today. You're a much more diverse group, young people, mentally and, you know, ethnically, than we were. There were white people, there were black people, but we weren't so multicultural. We didn't embrace, young people may have tried to embrace other cultures, which, you know, is part of why we have more of that in our society today. But I say that we all talked the talk as hippies, but we didn't walk the walk. We didn't follow through. We didn't act on what we said our narrative was. We, in the end, we just became like everybody else. But we tried, you know, we were the generation of Aquarius. We were going to open up to the universe. We were all going to be, you know, brothers and sisters and sing kumbaya and you know, love each other. That didn't happen. Today, I think that you have a better opportunity to do that if we can bring people together somehow. You know, people, my children, who are all older than you, Liberty, were different than we were. You know, they didn't. My son, for example, came home for a soccer game one time, and he told me a story about this kid on his team who made this amazing play. And there were two kids with the same name. One of them was black and one of them was white. And I said to him, well, which one was it? Was it the black one or the white one? He goes, I don't know what color he was. That just amazed me because it's the first thing we noticed when I was young in America. First, we noticed what sex you were. Then we noticed what race you were. And we all tried to have very solid racial identities that we don't seem to exist as much anymore. So, I mean, that's a positive thing. But what I've seen, and I think with the explosion of social media, is now it's so much easier to segregate yourself. I don't care what crazy-ass idea you have. There's somebody else on the internet that will agree with you and make you feel good about it. And I think that most people do not seek knowledge. I think you're unusual in that respect. Most people do not seek out knowledge. They seek to find information that supports the prejudices that they have. You know, I used to say my grandmother, who believed every stereotype, if a black person gave her a kidney, she wouldn't remember that, but she would remember every black person she ever saw cash a welfare check in a liquor store. You know, she looked for things to say, you know, and people, I'll tell you, when you're in politics, say this stupid anecdotal stuff all the time. If you say, you know, look, it's crazy. They're not eating your cats and dogs. You know, somebody will say, hey, I had a cousin who had a friend who had a cat and they never ate it, man. So that proves my point. You know, there's that all the time. People are saying crazy stuff like that. They're not looking at the facts. They're just looking for something to support their prejudices. And when you got a guy out there spreading prejudices like they're, you know, we used to say Carter's little liver pills because it came in a bottle of 1,000. You know, when you got somebody out there doing that, it's only going to stoke the flames and make it worse and add to division. Now, I hope that James Carville is right, because he said today, this is the end of the Democratic Party, as we know. I mean, the Republican Party, as we know it. The midterm elections are going to get slaughtered. And I hope that's true. I hope people turn out, and I hope they vote with their conscience, and they learn what's going on, you know? So what do you think the chances of that? What do you see with young people? Do you see them saying, yeah, damn it, I'm going to go out and vote, and I'm going to get involved? Or do you see them saying, no, I don't want any part of this?
You know, I think people more and more want a part of it. Obviously, I'm in D.C., a really passionate city, and I think the people that I'm surrounded by want to be a part of change. And, you know, I think it's really interesting because I think there's something so innate. You know, humans, we're such social beings. We need to be social in order to procreate. And I think that the way we've developed, when we look at someone and they're different from us, we automatically need to understand them. So we want to box them in and organize them in order for us to feel like we're at the same level. You know, that's how you make friends. That's how you interact. Are you my enemy or my foe? You know, are we similar? And so I think over time, you know, we've been trained, especially socially, whether it's through misogynism or racism, to react a certain way to certain different groups. And I think that's where stereotypes stem from. But I think that that's what makes this moment even more terribly problematic, because not only do we have someone who's influencing all of these trainings and the ways that humans socially communicate and see each other, but he's not doing it through a little red book. He's doing it through hundreds of media channels. You know, he's doing it through misinformation. And so it's really, really troubling, because it's like, I know the young people will want to be involved, because more than anything right now, we're being asked to change, whether it's to change for the worse and fall into these different behavioral trainings and different stereotypes that are being relit, like the flame is being refired, as you said, or it's people who see the wrongdoings in malice and hate. And I don't want to be extreme, but, you know, it's obviously a spectrum. But I feel like a lot of people right now feel like it's time to change, whether it's their opinion or whether it's to create actions that will bring about freedom and unity. And that's a beautiful thing. It really is. You know, one thing that he is doing, he is calling people out to be more politically aware, except I don't know if it's beneficial or if it's going to be a problem when next election we see all these young people showing up to vote and they're holding the torch that was lit by him.
Yeah, and you know, it's a double-edged sword, because you want to ask, yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right. They say that the number one reason that you like people more than any other factor is whether you think they like you. You're attracted to people that you think like you, and that think like you. You're absolutely right. But it's a double-edged sword. Look at what happened. What do you think Palestinian students on campus would say today after they voted for Donald Trump? There were a lot of them that wanted to vote for Donald Trump because they thought the Democrats weren't doing enough. And maybe the Democrats weren't doing enough. But guess what, y'all? He didn't end the war on day one. It's only gotten worse. And so, you know, you need to be active, but you need to be informed too, right? And that's what you and I, Liberty, when we first started this, that's what we talked about. We talked about, you know, there was all things about making America feel again and making America right again and making America just again. But we settled on an idea to make America think again, because voting from an emotional level for anybody is not the right place to be. You have to be intellectual about it. You have to think about what the consequences of your action are. And for me, the thing that bothers me most is the guilt I feel towards people like you and my children that we're not leaving for you the kind of world that was left for us. You know, I grew up in a time where I got my first job by looking in the newspaper. You know, times are good. A first job out of college. You know, times are good. There was high employment. We did better than our parents. Our parents had done better than our grandparents. And this looks like the first generation that's not going to do better than us. So I feel very, very, you know, I feel guilty about that. And I think a lot of older people feel guilty about that. And I don't know how you feel. I never had a single doubt in my mind that if I got a college education, I would have a good job and a decent life. And, you know, I do the things I want. I got married, have a family, have a career, and I've done all those things. And I think it was what we call the American dream, but I don't know if young people feel like the American dream exists for them anymore. Does the American dream, look, it's not going to be a problem for you. You're brilliant. You're engaged. You're compassionate. You're going to have, in my humble opinion, a great life and a great future. But I don't know that it goes for everybody. And what do you think? You think people still hold on to the American dream? They think that their life's going to be great?
Yeah. You know, unfortunately, was the American dream ever even real? Is the question I've been asking myself. Because, you know, he keeps saying, make America great again, make America great again. Great when? When we had segregation? When we had slaves walking around? You know, and I think
well, that's the point, isn't it?
Yeah.
The point is really what he's saying is make America white again.
Yeah.
You know, because it was great for people like me. But you're right. If you were Black in 1950 or 60, it wasn't so great for you. Or if you were a woman. You know, when I was in college, I didn't mean to cut you off, but when I was in college, I want to point out that I did a study on women in work. And 75% of all women, 75% of all women in the workforce out of 168 jobs listed by the Office of Employment, 75% were found in four professions. They were either teachers, nurses, secretaries, or domestic workers. That was it. 75%. Now they're found in all 168. But yeah, you're right. It was great for guys like him. It wasn't great for women. It wasn't great for people of color. Yeah.
Yeah.
So what was the American dream? That's very
well. That's a good question. And you know, I used to always say we're living the American dream. Look at us go, fostering this beautiful economy. Because the reality is, it's easier to make money in the United States than it is in most countries in the world. But what I learned actually in a classroom, and I don't know how I feel about this, and I think we should bring this to the table to discuss, but they taught me that the American dream was normalized, let's say in the early 20th century, the term American dream, when it was coined. And it was really during a time where capitalism was getting its show on the road, right? And, you know, a lot of programs like home loans and suburban developments were really popularizing this term. And what I might believe is that these white picket fences and Cheerio Pops that I imagine when I envision the American dream could be systemically designed to benefit white families. And there might be a cultural narrative there that we didn't even begin to consider because we wanted to be a part of it so bad we didn't realize, like, wait a minute, maybe we're being excluded and manipulated, you know? And I don't know, the idea of pulling yourself up by your bootstraps and carrying the load is something that has been so idealized, you know, without acknowledging how systems of privilege, racial hierarchy, and generational wealth already gave white Americans a start to the American dream and therefore access to it. And so while we constantly saw, obviously I wasn't alive for it, but all these commercials and ads of these white picket fences and these people so happy walking their dogs and, you know, the good life. I don't think, you know, low income housing in Chicago was feeling the same way about the American dream at that time. And that's something I'm starting to realize with Trump.
Well, that's something that came to light in the '60s, you know, that we were all raised. If you look at our media in those days, we all had a kinder, gentler media. There weren't black people on TV. Bill Cosby was like the first black guy that was on TV that wasn't, you know, some kind of service employee. We had Ozzy and Harriet, and we had perfect people, and, you know, Lucy and Desi, they were married, but they didn't even sleep in the same bed. You know, they had to have separate beds, and, you know, and everybody was lovely, and there were no mean people in the world. And that's what we were raised on. But yeah, that certainly wasn't true for half of America. But and some of the things that you seem to focus on were things that I encountered when I encountered people like Karl Marx that talked about what was wrong with capitalism. But you know what? We weren't even allowed to talk about that stuff. Because if you said, you know, in political science, for example, Marxism is a regular analytical tool. But if you say you're a Marxist, for most of America, especially uneducated America, Nazi, Marxist, communist, they're all the same thing, you know, to them. And so we didn't even talk about the ideas that you're talking about. And I hope there are more people that are being reflective the way you are, but I fear that they're not. This is the oldest trick in the book to say, you know, the immigrants are the problem. But I mean, it's gone to such a degree in America where we've elected a man that says they're eating your cats and dogs. Really? They showed, Jimmy Kimmel showed this thing about every president since, I think it was.
I saw that. That was brilliant.
And they all said these great things, you know, all these historic things. And then they get to Donald Trump and he says, they're eating your dogs and cats. And we elected this man to be leader of the free world. And what has he done? He's done nothing. He's gone bankrupt six times. You don't even know anybody that's gone bankrupt six times. I don't know anybody that's gone bankrupt six times, you know, because to do it, you have to be a real conniver and a con man. You have to have a lot of money to start out with. But he's gone bankrupt six times. So why in the world, if we were thinking, would we think, well, the guy's gone bankrupt six times. Let's have him run the most complex economy in the world. He should be able to figure that out. No, the guy has fallen flat on his face, and he keeps on nominating other people that are falling flat on their face. I mean, it's crazy.
It is. And, you know, but, at first.
Yeah, go ahead.
At first, it was funny to watch the. It wasn't funny, you know, but it was a little comical to see them fall on their face. But now they're falling on their faces in a domino effect.
Yes. Yes.
And it's really sad.
And that's it. And, you know, as a leader, this guy, his image is as important as anything, but his image is so self-centered that it doesn't, you know, it doesn't inspire anybody. You know, the Chinese, one of my favorite sayings is they say that a man wrapped up in himself makes a very small package. Donald Trump is an extremely small package. The guy is, you can't even insult him.
You can't even,
without him getting fighting like a third grader. There's a great meme somewhere on the internet of him and Elon Musk fighting like they're 3-year-olds, you know, throwing punches and, you know, saying things about each other's mother. It's just crazy. And I hope that America is waking up to this You know, I see great hope in people like you, Liberty, young people that are engaged and care and are so smart. And I think that's the hope for the future. And we've seen, you know, you asked me about my perspective as an old man and as a hippie, and I'll tell you, we've seen this before. We saw it with McCarthy in the era where the communists, we were afraid the communists were knocking on our front door. We've seen it before that. We've seen it with when the Irish immigration, you know, kind of bunch of, you know, the big Irish immigration, when the Poles came, the Italians came. It's always the same old rhetoric. It's not yours. In fact, one of my favorite songs that we play from time to time is by a guy named Huey Long. And Huey Long used to say, you know, he was in New Orleans. And the rich people in New Orleans in those days were the French, because they settled New Orleans. And he would say, you know, your baby, your house could burn down, your baby could brown, and not one of them Frenchmen would care. And that got him elected, because people go, yeah, you know, they're kind of snotty and we don't like them anyway. And absolutely, they're French, you know, so they have a kind of a biological inclination to be a little better than the rest of us. And, you know, but that worked, and it works every time we use it, you know. And now, I mean, this guy, though, is so extreme, right? He wants to deport the guy that won the Democratic primary. You know, he's thinking about deporting Elon Musk, which, by the way, I'd like to say I'm personally in favor of. Let's send him back to South Africa. You know, how did he get in the country in the first place?
Do you think his wife is on the list?
I don't know. I don't know which one. You know, I mean, he's got 11 of them. He may be the most multicultural person in America. You know, again, Jimmy Kimmel, who always makes me laugh, said on Father's Day, he goes like, wow, wouldn't you like to be Elon Musk today? Imagine all the cards and gifts he's getting today. But, you know, he's the beauty of all this is that I've been a father, and I understand when all these kids become teenagers, he's going to have 11 kids hating his ass. So, you know, that's something to look forward. But also, in all seriousness, these people are so over the top. Let's hope that Cardinal's right. Let's hope that they pushed us far enough to the edge that you know, we've seen what can happen and we react to it. You know, I want to tell you that one of the advantages I've had in life, I started working full time when I was 14 years old, and I was broke for a lot of my early life. And I never was poor. I always had food to eat. I always had people that loved me and cared about me. But I was very close to poverty, and I saw it, and I saw what it does to people. And that's what made a liberal out of me. So I hope that people see what's going on in the world today and with him, and they react in the same way. It pushes them to care about the future and care about each other. Because, you know, in the end, it's not really how much money you have or you know, it's how you live. It's the people that you're engaged with. It's the community that you live in. It's what you can do to help people. And you know, it truly is, as corny as it sounds, the best way to receive is to give. And I know you know that because you're a giver.
Absolutely. You know, that's really beautifully said. And I think it's really interesting that you mentioned the reason I became a Democrat is because I was close to poverty. Because during this election, that's a really big reason as to why a lot of people voted for Trump. Yes. They wanted a better economy. They were close to poverty and they believed in him. He was an economist. And it really shows to say that we're all the same. We want the same things. It's just about the way they word it is what gets to you, you know. And that's the power behind the media right now. They're really dividing us.
Well, and you know, I've left this to kind of the end of the show because I really didn't want to pick a fight with you. And I think this may cause one, but I think the same thing's going on in both parties. I think just as the radical right has taken over the Republican Party, the progressive left has taken over the Democratic Party. Now, look, I hate to bring up, I want to say right up front, I think transgender people should have the same rights everybody else does. But when liberals latched onto that, and 98% of the people in America said, we don't want them in girls' locker rooms, we don't want them competing with women, and we said, no, 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 no. The progressives want that, and we're going to hold on to it. It was stupid, and it was undemocratic, because we realized the majority of America didn't want it, and it pushed us in the wrong direction, just like these nuts who say, we fly the American flag. We don't fly the Mexican flag. We fly the American flag, and then we show a Trump rally, and everybody's got the stars and bars. Nobody's got an American flag, you know? I think we both suffer from that same thing. So I'm blaming some of this stuff on you progressives.
Oh, you know, I completely agree with you. I think that, I don't know which one, I wish I could say, I can't believe you said that, end this show now. But, you know, sadly, I completely agree with you. I think we're just as bad. I think we both think that our problems were what need to be solved. And I think we both exclude, you know, the population, when in reality, the government should be supporting the majority of the country. But I think that Trump has made that fight a whole different playing field. I think he can't even be compared to a Republican president, because he is just an anomaly. He is a media figure, and he's always been a media figure. We have a celebrity in office, and not a celebrity like Ronald Reagan, which I'm not really familiar with how his celebrityness contributed to his governing, but we have a man who won his election with the youth by posting videos dancing in a trash can on TikTok. You know, we have a man who's creating a new space for the political world. It's no longer about laws and policies. It's about clickbait. Our government has become clickbait. And it's like, wow, you know, I don't even know what direction to take us in. So being a progressive, I hope the Democrats can post some TikToks dancing on a roof or something like that, that can be up to par, so that we can have that same media presence and maybe even manipulate the public. I don't know.
You know what, damn it, I'm going to start going to yoga tomorrow and do stretching exercises so I can be that guy dancing in the trash can. The problem, the only question is, if I dance in the trash can, will Mrs. Brown help me out of the trash can, or will she just put the lid on top?
I think it depends on how good the dance is. It depends on how good the dance is.
Well, I'll work on it. Well, with that brilliant comment, we'll end our show today. I want to end just a minute or two early, because I want to play a slightly longer song at the end of the show. This is by Neil Diamond. It's called Coming to America. And this is for Donald Trump, so you can understand what made America great to begin with, and what continues to make America great. It's the people that come here seeking freedom and a new life, and are willing to work hard to make that happen. Not some guy, not some candy ass guy that was handed millions and millions and millions of dollars by his father, and then acts like he did it all while he's out playing golf and the rest of us are trying to figure it out. So it's time to think America. Here's Neil Diamond. Liberty Jones, as usual, you're amazing. We'll talk to you next week. Thanks, folks. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote.